Good afternoon.
It's Thursday, November 18th, 2021, and time to read from today's Sioux City Journal. I'm Sandy Barron. I'm a volunteer and pleased to be able to bring you the news today. Here's a look at what we'll be reading. First, we'll read stories of local interest. Next, we'll turn to the opinion page, and at half past the hour, we'll read the obituaries. We'll conclude with sports and feature stories as time allows. First, let's take a look at the weather. Today, breezy with plenty of sun, winds out of the west-northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour with a high of 42. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 21. Tomorrow, Friday, we'll have a high of 49 and a low of 26. Saturday will be the warmest day in the forecast with a high of 52 and a low of 26. Sunday, we'll have a high of 45 and a low of 18. And Monday we'll have a high of 39 and a low of 25. The sun rose this morning at 7:20 and will set tonight at 5:01. Tomorrow we'll have two fewer minutes of sunshine with the sun rising at 7:21 a.m. and setting at 5 p.m. Next, here's the mini editorial. This comes to us from Don Miller of Sioux City. Hey everybody, remember this time last year, we all wore masks to prevent COVID infection, but the side benefit was zero flu cases. Maybe now that the flu season is here, we should consider masking up since the flu bug can be vicious and deadly. And again, this comes to us from Don Miller of Sioux City. And the headline story on the front page shows a picture of Michael Bayala standing outside Bayala's Learning Center at 2219 Dakota Avenue in South Sioux City. Since 2012, Bayala has sought to offer a learning center and 24-hour daycare for parents who work all shifts at local plants. He plans to open in December. Caring for his community. This comes to us from Nick Heitrich of the Sioux City Journal from South Sioux City. Good ideas remain good ideas, no matter how long it takes for them to come to fruition. Back in 2012, Michael Bayala wanted to help his clients, many of them local factory workers and immigrants and their families, with childcare and education. He envisioned a daycare center open 24 hours so parents working overnight shifts would have a stable source of childcare. In addition, educators would help children with reading, math, and other basic subjects to give them a boost. When I have something in my mind, I want to get it done, Bayala said. It may have taken a few years, but Bayala has gotten it done. Through a lot of hard work and an unexpected hand from a well-known Siouxland company, Bayala plans to open Bayala's Learning Center and Daycare next month at 2219 Dakota Avenue in South Sioux City. It's a fitting location given that the building was once home to the South Sioux City Public Library and more recently the South Sioux City Community School District's Welcome Center. It's a longtime dream come true for Bayala, whose voice rises with excitement when talking about it. This is something I love by nature, he said. I love to help children. One of my slogans is Building the Next Generation. The owner of Translation, Immigration, and Income Tax Assistance Services, Bayala, who came to the United States in 1992 from the West African country of Burkina Faso and moved to Sioux City in 2008, learned of the challenges families faced while preparing their taxes. With some factories producing around the clock, finding childcare can be challenging for workers. Many of Bayala's clients couldn't take advantage of the childcare credit on their tax returns because they were having family members or friends watch their kids and couldn't document childcare payments. Bayala believed a 24-hour daycare would benefit those parents and also their employers, making it easier for workers to get work when they had solid child care arrangements. I want to help the industry here so people who work there can leave their kids anytime, he said. He started working on a business plan, which turned out to be the easy part. Finding a location was a different story. Unable to find a suitable space in Sioux City, he looked to South Sioux City, where the vacant building on Dakota Avenue, owned by the school district, caught his eye. His efforts to buy the building weren't going well, so a friend put him in touch with Lance Morgan, CEO of Ho-Chunk Inc., the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska's development corporation. The two had coffee in Morgan's office one morning in May of 2019, and after hearing about Bayala's plans and efforts to buy a building, Morgan said he was interested in helping. "I thought he was just saying it to make me feel good," Bayala said. Imagine how Bayala felt this summer when he was informed that Ho-Chunk Capital, subsidiary HCI Real Estate, had purchased the building on Dakota Avenue and would lease it back to Bayala so he could open his center. "It struck me as the right thing to do," said Morgan, who said he faced similar challenges while getting Ho-Chunk off the ground. "I just identified with Bayala a little bit. He didn't ask for a handout. He just asked for an opportunity. I admire the work he's doing." With a location secured, Bayala dug into his own pockets to remodel the building's interior. An illness delayed Bayala's progress, but he's confident in the December opening. By late October, 15 children were signed up for daycare. "I'm very confident this is going to open," Bayala said. Plans call for up to 96 children in the morning and another 96 in the evening when fully staffed. Once the daycare is established, Bayala will launch the learning center. He hopes to eventually employ 30 to 35 caregivers and educators. A recent tour of the building showed classrooms taking shape, though work remained to be done. Bayala isn't letting that douse his excitement that a center more than 9 years in the making soon will become a reality. It's a dream come true for him, and he hopes for the families who need the services he'll be offering. "I want to leave a legacy that he tried and he was a success," Bayala said. Time will tell if Bayala's endeavor is a success. With the amount of time and work he's invested in it thus far, it's off to a good start. Schools waiting on mandate. This comes to us from Caitlin Yamada of the Sioux City Journal. From Sioux City: "The Sioux City Community School District is among hundreds of districts in Iowa that would be required to vaccinate their teachers and staff under a COVID-19 directive issued by President Biden. The mandate, which applies to employees of private companies with more than 100 employees, would include 88% of teachers and staff and 59.8% of public districts in Iowa, according to research by the National Center for Education Statistics, or NCES. 27 of the roughly 50 school districts in the journal's coverage area would be subject to the mandate. The NCES data does not include numbers for private schools like Bishop Heelan in Sioux City. Iowa and 26 other Republican-led states are challenging in court the Biden administration's vaccine requirement, arguing the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration does not have the authority to impose the mandate. Suits across the country were consolidated this week in the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. On Wednesday, OSHA announced a court order requiring the agency to take no steps to implement or enforce the vaccine requirement until further court order. Originally, employers faced a January 4th, 2022 to complete vaccinations for their employees. The order also gave employers an option of weekly testing. The Iowa OSHA oversees both private and public schools in Iowa, said IOSHA Administrator Russell Perry. If the pending lawsuit fails, all schools with more than 100 employees will be required to abide by the mandate. Previously, Sioux City Schools Superintendent Paul Gaussman said he believed public schools were not subject to the order. In 24 states, the OSHA definition of employer excludes public school staff. In 26 states, including Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota, schools are covered by OSHA-approved state plans. That would qualify them to follow the federal mandate according to guidance released by OSHA in September. The Sioux City District has nearly 2,000 employees. District administration are waiting and watching developments related to the vaccine requirement, a district spokesperson said. As soon as expectations are clearly set, we will comply to the best of our ability, said Leslie Haying, the district's director of communications. Officials in the Sergeant Lafluten School District said they also are waiting for additional guidance. The Sioux City Education Association, which represents unionized teachers in the area, does not have an official stance on vaccinations for teachers. But Brenda Zahner, regional director for the Iowa and Sioux City Education Associations, said the association recommends people do what's best for themselves and to stay safe. Reynolds has described the Biden administration's vaccine mandate as unconstitutional, unlawful, and unwise. She recently signed a bill that allows medical and religious exemptions for COVID-19 vaccines and guarantees employees who are fired for refusing the vaccine are eligible for state unemployment benefits. The frequently asked question of the day is, I love the videos you do with stories. How do I know if there is one? And the journal staff responds, usually in our print edition, we'll direct you to the website, siouxcityjournal.com, to watch. Also, we'll alert you on social media, and of course, you'll see them attached to stories online. And if you have a story for FAQ, send it to bmiller@siouxcityjournal.com or mail it to Bruce Miller, Sioux City Journal, 515 Pavonia Street, Sioux City, Iowa, 51101. Today's online poll question is, have you ever needed childcare on an irregular schedule? And yesterday's poll question was, did you have any write-in votes in this election? Of the 27 people voting, 11% said yes and 89% said no. Today's speak out question is, what's your favorite Martin Scorsese movie? And you can sound off at www.facebook.com/Sioux City Journal. And turning to the local and state page, hat rack future up in the air. This comes to us from Dolly A. Butts of the Sioux City Journal from Sioux City. The future of a hat rack bolted to the sidewalk outside Sioux City Hall hangs in the balance. The sculpt Siouxland board is leaning toward permanently removing Hang Your Hat 3, an example of ready-made art from Ken Peterson and a part of the nonprofit organization's collection, according to Sioux City Art Center director Todd Behrens. Behrens said Wednesday that the hat rack, a popular place to leave coats and other clothing for the needy, was recently taken out because it had become rusty and one of its hooks had broken off. Nothing official has been done, but what we discussed was actually pulling that piece from the Sculpt Siouxland collection. This is its third go-round. It's kind of a continual thing that needs to be either repainted or replaced, said Behrens, who noted that there is a process for removing pieces from the collection, which can take a few months. The Sculpt Siouxland board is moving toward removing that from its collection. During the council comments portion of Monday's Sioux City Council meeting, Councilwoman Julie Shaner said the city had no part in the hat rack's removal. At that time, Shaner and other council members were under the impression that the rack would undergo repairs and then be put back in its place. I'd like to see it get a quick repair and at least go back for the winter, she said Wednesday, after being informed by the journal that the Sculpt Siouxland board is weighing permanent removal. If people are used to that, maybe we can replace it with something else. Peterson was living in Sioux City in 2008 when he went to Pier 1, bought a coat rack, and bolted it to the sidewalk where an earlier sculpt Zuland work of his had sat. This first version of the rack, which Peterson placed in front of the former Little Chicago Deli at 525 4th Street, didn't last long. Vandals snapped it in half at one point, and at another point tied it to a tree. The rack was replaced with a second version, which was later moved to its present-day spot near the City Hall, and then a third version, Hang Your Hat 3. Behrens said the rack is currently in storage at the Art Center. One of the things that we'll have to deal with is that the artist is no longer living in the community. He lives on the West Coast, Behrens said. We'll have to work with him on what the future might be, and we'll talk to the donors as well. As part of its award-winning 2018 series on the homeless in Sioux City, the journal featured the rack, which matches donors of winter coats with other clothing with with local residents residing and living on the street. From the start, Peterson said he envisioned the rack as sort of a thrift store operating outside the parameters of a traditional brick-and-mortar store. He said the informal exchange quickly became a hit with those living on the fringes of society who are uncomfortable entering the store or seeking social comfort. Immediately after I put the piece up, I started hanging stuff on it, and that caught on pretty well, Peterson said in a 2018 interview. State Senator Jackie Smith announces re-election. This comes to us from Jared McNett of the Sioux City Journal from Sioux City. Senator Jackie Smith, Democrat of Sioux City, announced Wednesday that she will seek a second four-year term in the Iowa Senate. Smith currently represents Iowa Senate District 7, which covers Sioux City's North Side and West Side neighborhoods, as well as some rural areas of northern Woodbury County. However, in 2022, she will be running in the newly drawn Senate District 1, which has boundaries similar to her current district. I am running for re-election to continue my work for Sioux City's middle-class families, Smith said in a press release. I believe hard work deserves fair play, and I ran for state senate in 2018 to be a voice for working Iowans. Smith, a businesswoman and former member of the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors, defeated then-Senator Rick Bertrand, Republican of Sioux City, in the 2018 election. Smith is a member of the Senate Agriculture, Appropriations, Education, and Transportation Committees. Though the 2022 primary in Iowa is months away, candidates across the state have started declaring their intention to run for office in Senate and House seats. State legislators recently approved a new set of maps that account for population changes recorded in the 2020 census. The current Senate District 1, which covers Clay, Dickinson, Lyon, Osceola, and Palo Alto counties, had been represented by Senator Zach Whiting, Republican of Spirit Lake, though he announced in late October that he was resigning his seat to take a job in Texas with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Earlier this month, Iowa Senator Craig Williams decided against running for re-election after the newly constituted Senate District 6 put him in the same area as fellow Republican Senator Jason Schultz. And for your information, Jared McNett is an online editor and reporter for the Sioux City Journal. You can reach him at 712-293-4234 and follow him on Twitter at TwoHeadedBoy98. We turn now to the opinion page, and we have an Other Voices editorial. This one comes to us from the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and the headline reads, Addressing a Child Care Crisis in Iowa. The Cedar Rapids Gazette editorial follows. Child care in Iowa is costly and scarce. Long-time problems only worsened by the pandemic. It's a crisis that's costing Iowa nearly $1 billion annually in employee absences, turnover, and lost tax revenues, according to a task force appointed by Governor Kim Reynolds. So it's good news that $200 million in federal pandemic aid will be distributed as grants to child care facilities that took an economic hit as COVID-19 spread across Iowa. Reynolds announced that the state will also make $10 million in grants available to build new facilities or expand existing ones. Among 15 recommendations from the task force, Reynolds said Iowa will implement a shared service system allowing daycare providers to pool business functions such as purchasing to cut costs. Providers who go above and beyond will receive state recognition. These moves represent a welcome step forward in addressing the crisis. The task force found that Iowa leads the nation in the percentage households where all parents work. Nearly a quarter of Iowans live in a child care desert, an area with a critical shortage of providers. In rural Iowa, 35% of Iowans live in child care deserts. Child care costs Iowans, on average, more than $1,000 per month, topping housing costs for many families. We're going to support working families, fill in the gaps in Iowa's child care system, and do everything we can to unleash our state's incredible workforce, Reynolds said while announcing distribution of grant funding last week. But her announcement and the task force's recommendations don't directly address another big problem contributing to the child care crisis. Pay for child care workers is low. The median salary is $22,260 annually, or $10.70 per hour. Given the responsibility they bear for caring for our children, those wages are shamefully inadequate. High turnover and worker shortages plague the industry. State recognition is great, but a decent paycheck would be better. And although Democrats in Congress provided child care aid, they have not delivered on requiring paid family leave. The lack of paid leave puts more pressure on working families to find child care. We also call on the governor to periodically report on the progress being made thanks to grant dollars and other changes. We've seen task forces and grants come and go over the years, but Iowans caught up in the crisis deserve to know if the governor truly is following through on her pledge to do everything she can. And you can share your opinion. The staff writes, "We welcome and encourage reader feedback. Letters to the editor must be no longer than 250 words and will be edited for length. Please include your name, hometown, and daytime telephone number for verification. Phone numbers will not be printed. We will not publish anonymous letters or open letters or letters to a third party. We will publish no more than 2 letters and 2 mini editorials per writer a month. Letters, mini editorials, and guest opinions may be published or distributed in print, electronic, or other forms." Brandstad Drake University Forum Partnership. This comes to us from Aaron Murphy of the Journal Des Moines Bureau. From Des Moines, Terry Brandstad is bringing his half century of experience in public service to Drake University. Brandstad, the former Iowa governor who held the post longer than any state chief executive in the nation's history, and more recently was the former U.S. ambassador to China, will serve as an ambassador in residence at Drake University. It is a non-paid position under which Brandstad will occasionally instruct and generally make himself available to Drake University students. Along with his new position, Brandstad will also bring some materials like papers and memorabilia from his time as governor to be displayed at Drake University. The announcement was made Wednesday during a news conference in the law library at Opperman Hall on the Drake University campus. Brandstad attended Drake's law school in the early 1970s, just as he was also beginning his historical political career. "I have a strong commitment to public service, and even though I've completed my time as governor and ambassador, I want to give back," Brandstad said during the news conference. I want to help students, and I want to help the Drake community. I want to encourage people to get involved and to make a difference. Branstad was first elected to the Iowa House of Representatives in 1972 while he was still attending Drake Law School. He became lieutenant governor in 1978 and then was elected governor in 1982. He served four terms as governor before stepping down to serve in the private sector. He returned and was elected governor again in 2010 and 2014. In 2017, he was named U.S. Ambassador to China by then-President Donald Trump. Branstad served in that role for nearly all of Trump's one term in office. Can you imagine sitting in a class with the longest-serving governor in the history of these United States, as well as an ambassador to China, and just asking those questions that will come to mind based on that experience? What an invaluable experience our students are going to have, Drake University President Marty Martin said. Branstad said he looks forward to engaging with Drake students about any kind of topics relevant to his 50 years of public service, his time as state lawmaker, as governor, and as U.S. ambassador to China, a country that is vital to the U.S. economically, but often at odds with the U.S. on human rights and other issues. Branstad said he hopes to create a conference or symposium hosted by Drake University on the complicated relationship between the U.S. and China. I want to do what I can to continue that relationship, and I know it's a challenging one, Branstad said. We're two very different systems, and we've been disappointed in the direction that Chinese President Xi Jinping has led China. We thought he would be more of a reformer like his father, but instead he's gone more hardline direction and more authoritarian and more controlled by the Communist Party. Branstad added later, we have some big differences on policy, and those have gotten wider over the years, and especially since COVID. Sioux City Man wins $95,790 in Iowa lottery from Sioux City. A Sioux City man claimed an Iowa lottery prize of more than $95,000. Max Carroll won an extreme green progressive Instaplay jackpot prize of $95,790. He bought his winning ticket at Court Street Tavern, 2106 Court Street, and claimed his prize Friday at the lottery's Storm Lake Regional Office. The Extreme Green Progressive jackpot starts at $20,000 and increases with each ticket sold statewide until it is won. And there's a picture of Max Carroll accompanying this story, showing him with the check that he recently won more than $95,000 in the Iowa State Lottery. It is nearly half past the hour, and we turn now to the obituaries. The first obituary comes to us from Sioux City. Connie M. Murray. Connie M. Murray, 68, of Sioux City, passed away on Wednesday, November 10th, in Texas. Services will be held 10 a.m. Saturday at the Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Sioux City. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. with a vigil at 7 p.m. and the family present from 5 to 7 p.m. at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Connie Mae Murray was born on September 23, 1953 in Sioux City, the daughter of Leonard and Mary Beebe Cook. Connie graduated Riverside High School in 1971. On March 25, 1972, Connie married Gerald Murray at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. She worked at Emerson and Roosevelt Schools as a teacher assistant and librarian at Lincoln School. In 2020, Connie retired from Perry Creek School. Connie taught CCD for many years at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. From Bronson, Iowa, Michael Richard Jordan. Michael Richard Jordan, age 42, died Saturday, November 13th. Services will be November 20th at 10 a.m. at Holly Springs Bible Fellowship Church in Hornick, Iowa. Burial will be following the service at Floyd Township Cemetery, Bronson, with military honors. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service time at the church. Arrangements are with Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. From Ottawa, Iowa, Ronald Eugene Ron Heck, 79, died Sunday, November 14th. Celebration of life will be November 19th at 6 p.m. at Bush Family Chapel, Ottawa. At Rush Family Chapel in Ottawa. Burial will be at a later date. Visitation will be November 19th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the chapel. Arrangements are with Rush Family Care Service of Ottawa. From North Sioux City, Clifford Cliff Lang, 73, died Tuesday, November 16th, 2021. Arrangements are pending with Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Lamarck. From Sergeant Bluff, David J. Dave Mogensen. James Dave Mogensen, 61 of Sergeant Bluff, passed away on Tuesday, November 16th at a local hospital from coronavirus-related complications. Services will be at 11 a.m. on Friday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel with Pastor Gary Harris officiating. Burial will follow in Graceland Park Cemetery. Visitation with family present will be 1 hour prior to services on Friday morning. Online condolences may be offered to the family at www.meyerbroschapels.com. Dave was born on April 6th, 1960, to Jean and Shirley McClary Mogensen. Following high school graduation, Dave began his career in farming, a lifelong passion. He married Luann Mulvihill on September 4th, 1993, in Sioux City. Dave enjoyed drag racing and anything to do with Kawasaki motorcycles, including drag racing his own all around the Midwest and southern regions in the IDBA, International Drag Bike Association. Dave was a track champion in Marion, South Dakota in 1983. He enjoyed wrenching in his shop, working to make machines faster and louder. In lieu of flowers, family requests memorials in Dave's name be offered to the Children's Miracle Network. From Danbury, Iowa, Alfred P. Paulsrud, 95, died Friday, November 17th. Celebration of life will be November 20th at 2 p.m. at Arthur Evangelical Free Church in Arthur. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service time at the church. Arrangements are with Christensen Van Houten Funeral Home of Ida Grove. From Emerson, Nebraska, Richard Rich Anderson, 70, died Monday, November 15th. Services will be November 19th at 10 a.m. at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Emerson. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery in Emerson. Visitation will be November 18th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the church. Arrangements are with Mendelo Smith Funeral Home of Emerson. From Sergeant Luff, Donna Louise Lloyd, 85, died Sunday, November 14th. Services will be November 20th at 11 a.m. at Smithland United Methodist Church in Smithland. Burial will be in the Little Sioux Township Cemetery in Smithland. Visitation will be November 19th from 4 to 8 p.m. At Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Sioux City, Carol J. Andrew, 79, died Monday, November 15th. Services will be November 22nd at 11 a.m., Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service time at the funeral home. From Sioux Falls, Joan Benson, 67, of Sioux Falls, died Sunday, November 14th at Avera McKinnon Hospital in Sioux Falls. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. on Friday at Golgotha Lutheran Church in rural Wausau, Nebraska. Reverend Jerome Leckband will officiate with burial in Fabla Lutheran Cemetery in Wausau. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. today at Brock House Funeral Home in Wausau. Joan Claire Rosberg, daughter of Spencer Rosberg and Gladys Rosberg Olson, was born September 9, 1954, in Bloomfield, Nebraska. She attended Wausau Public Schools and Wayne State College. Joan was married to Stephen Ellis Benson on August 17, 1954. 1974 at Golgotha Lutheran Church. Joan lived in Wausau, Sheridan, Wyoming, Alexandria, South Dakota, Sioux City, and Sioux Falls. Joan owned and operated 4 restaurants in Sioux City after her 20-year teaching career. Joan was a member of Golgotha Lutheran Church and other Missouri Synod churches. From Vermilion, Anthony Edelen, Anthony Edelen of Vermilion, South Dakota, age 44, died Saturday, November 13th. Celebration of life will be November 21st at 6 p.m. at United Church of Christ Congregational at 226 East Main in Main Street in Vermilion. Visitation will be November 21st from 4 to 6 p.m. at the church. Masks requested. Live stream of service will be available at www.facebook.com/UCCVermilion. Arrangements are with Hanson Funeral Home in Vermilion. And finally, from Lamar's, Melissa Missy Sargison, 41, died Tuesday, November 16th. Celebration of life will be November 20th at 12:30 p.m., Maurer Johnson Funeral Home at Lamar's. Visitation will be November 19th from 2 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home and resumes 1 hour prior to the service time. We turn now to the sports page. Prep volleyball. Panthers prep for state. This comes to us from Zach James of the Sioux City Journal from North Sioux City. From North Sioux City, the Dakota Valley High School volleyball team arrived in Rapid City on Wednesday in preparation for the SDHSAA Class A state tournament, hopeful that it can stay and can last through Saturday. Sure, the third-seeded Panthers are hoping to see number 1 Sioux Falls Christian for their third year in a row. But first, their focus is on beating number 6 Hamlin at 8:45 p.m. Thursday at Summit Arena at the Monument. Panthers coach Mary Miller realizes that the pieces have to fall in place to get back to that title match, however. Our goal is to get back there, and we want a chance at Sioux Falls Christian, said Miller, after DV defeated Lakota Tech at the South Dakota 16 match last week. Hamlin also has its mascot as the Chargers, coming to the state tournament with 26-6 record. Hamlin has won its last 12 matches. It hasn't gone a fourth set in nearly a month, sweeping Britton Hecla, Webster, Great Plains Lutheran, and Mobridge Pollock. Castlewood was the last school that took Hamlin to a 5-set match, but Hamlin ended up winning that match. The last time Hamlin lost a match came on September 25th, where it lost to Arlington, T Area, and Coleman Egan in a neutral site tournament. Hamlin's top 3 hitters are all juniors. Allie Abraham leads Hamlin with 433 kills, while Cammy Wadsworth has 198 and Gracelyn Lyseff has 194. If the Panthers can beat Hamlin, then they get to Friday's semifinal. Their DV faces the winner between Garrettson and Elkton Lake Benton. The Panthers have not played either of those teams this season. Then if the Panthers get past the semis, they get their wish with Sioux Falls Christian. The Panthers have seen Sioux Falls Christian in the last 2 years at the Class A title match, and the Chargers have won both times in the state title match. The Chargers and Panthers have also met twice in the regular season, with Sioux Falls Christian winning both of those matches. Miller saw room for improvement after seeing the Chargers beat the Panthers back on September 23rd in North Sioux City. We can play with them. If we can improve the way we have been throughout the season, we can be right there at the end of the season, Miller said. They are so physical. Georgia Verdenhall leads the Panthers kill hitting at attack with 318 kills, while sophomore Sophia Tuttle has 241 kills. Logan Miller leads in assists with 846. Kate Van Royen leads in digs with 410, while Sam Archer is second with 330. And the sidebar makes notes that what's up next is the Class A state tournament, It will run from Thursday through Saturday at the Summit Arena at the Monument in Rapid City. And you can stream this at sdph.org/volleyball. And in IHSAA Class 3 Football Championship, Chasing Perfection. This comes to us from Shane Lance of the Sioux City Journal, and it's accompanied by a large picture showing Boyden Hall Rock Volley celebrating on the field after its victory against Solon on Saturday during the semifinal round of the state football championships at the Unidome in Cedar Falls. From Cedar Falls, it's been a spectacular season on the gridiron for the Boyden Hall Rock Valley Co-op football team. On Friday night, the Nighthawks have a chance to make it perfect. The Nighthawks are an unblemished 12-0 on the year so far, winning every game by at least 21 and outscoring their opponents by a points margin of 558-110. As an offense, the Nighthawks rank second in Class 3A in total touchdowns, passing touchdowns, and offensive touchdowns. The only team ahead of them, Harlan. The team BHRV will battle on Friday for the Class 3A state championship. The game is a rematch of last year's Class 3A semifinal, which Harlan won over BHRV 44-7. Now the Nighthawks will get their shot at revenge against one of the state's elite teams. It's a bit of a mixed blessing. I don't know if that's a joy, Brandt said with a laugh. I just know that we are facing a very talented team and a very tough physical team. I think we are coming at them with a very different team than we had last year. We're a little bit healthier, and the kids that were juniors last year and seniors this year got more experience. Another big difference on this year's Nighthawk team is the addition of senior quarterback Tanner Tesla. Tesla has been one of Class 3A's most electric players this season, with 32 passing. Casper Berger also has 3,034 passing yards this season, 423 more than the next closest 3A quarterback, and 770 more than Tesla. As a team, the Cyclones rank first in 3A in total touchdowns, passing touchdowns, receiving touchdowns, passing yards, per completion, and receiving yards per catch, while placing second in total passing completions. It's a Swiss Army knife of an offense. No matter where you look, there is a weapon waiting to do damage to whatever defense doesn't pay it the proper respect. That's the hard thing. You've got to cover all of them, Grant said. That's the big thing, but they've got to cover all of us, too. I look at these guys, and I think they're an incredible football team. They're incredibly well coached. Their coaching staff is incredible, and I just have nothing but the highest respect for what they do and also their athletes. The Cyclones have several top flight of offensive threats outside their quarterback, too. Senior wide receiver Connor Frame has 1,020 yards receiving this season with a 3A best 21 receiving touchdowns, while junior Aiden Hall has 760 rushing yards and 16 touchdowns on the ground, along with 726 receiving yards and 7 TDs through the air. Hall ranks fifth in 3A with 8.7 rushing yards per carry and also ranks first in his class with 24.2 receiving yards per catch. Close behind him in that category is Frame, who is second with 22.2 receiving yards per catch, while senior Cyclones teammate Joey Mosier is fourth in 3A with 20.5 receiving yards per catch. Needless to say, fans can expect to see some passing fireworks at the Unidome. The Cyclones have put up an impressive season, but the Nighthawks might be the team best positioned to bring them down. BHRV has an offense that ranks second in 3A in total touchdowns, passing touchdowns, and receiving touchdowns, while placing third overall in rushing touchdowns. In addition to Tesla, senior Landon Van Kekerix and Caleb Katz have put up big numbers. Van Kekerix has a team-high 649 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns on the season, while also hauling in 14 receiving touchdowns and 715 yards. Katz, who played quarterback for the Nighthawks last season in Tesla's absence, has caught 37 passes this season for 633 yards. Both players are also standout players on defense, with Van Kekerik's leading the squad with 65.5 total tackles, while Katz has a pair of interceptions this week. Last week, the BHRV defense held Solon to just 135 yards of total offense. The Spartans came into the game ranked 3rd in the state in rushing yards and were held to just 12 yards on the ground against the Nighthawks. Our athletes just went out and did what they do on Friday, Tesla said. The defense was huge Friday. You look at the scoreboard and you see 42-0. That's tough to do at state. That's pretty special. With wins over Solon and Sergeant Bluff Luton in the past 2 weeks, Grant is excited to see how his team stacks up against the state's number one team. We know what we've got to prepare for, Grant said. The kids are excited and we've been playing well. We're excited to see what we can do next, and we're going to be doing it against the best. That's what they are, so we'll find out where we are at and what we can do in a hurry. The Class 3A state title night between the Class 3A state title game between the Nighthawks and Cyclones will kick off Friday at 1 p.m. On the baseball front, United Sports Academy launches clinic. This comes to us from Zach James from North Sioux City. Ben Oberle had an idea once the baseball season ended, and it stemmed from something that happened over the spring. What if area rising baseball players had the chance to learn from some of the professionals who grew up around here? That's where United Sports Academy's Train with the Pros comes in. It's a winter-long series that begins Friday at the training facility in North Sioux City. These standout baseball athletes include North High School's Dan Tillo and Tamik Tomcha, East grad Dom Thompson Williams, former Bishop Heelan standout Tyler Cropley, as well as St. Paul Saints pitching coach Mike McCarthy and infield coach Tyler Smarslock. The idea started when Tomcha and Oberle, the Academy's sports director, talked about how unique of a facility USA is and how much Tomcha wished he would have the chance to use that while with the Stars. I can't tell you how excited I am for Siouxland to have these camps come to the United Sports Academy, Tomcha said. It's such a cool chance for the kids to learn from current professional coaches and players. It's an opportunity I wish I could have had growing up in Sioux City, and hope the kids in the area take advantage of having these camps so close to home. Robert Neustrom, a North grad, will be unable to come home for the series. United Turf, a division of United Sports Academy, is still taking registrations at usportsacad.com, and the fee for the clinic is $60. The first installment is this weekend with McCarthy. It starts at 10 a.m. with youth players ages up to fourth grade, while fifth through eighth graders have a mid-afternoon session, and high schoolers aged pitchers get their shots starting at 3:30 p.m. McCarthy and Tomcha became friends while the former Stars standout played for the Minnesota Twins AAA affiliate, and Tomcha invited McCarthy to come and check out United Turf and batting cages while giving some pitching tips during the clinic. McCarthy won't be teaching the lesson to the kids per se. According to Oberle, McCarthy's main objective is to teach the parents the drills and skills so they can properly work with their kids throughout the winter. We have like 40 families signed up for it, Oberle said. The installment that Oberle is fired up for most, however, comes next month. Along with the training opportunities, the Train with Pros series will offer a bonus question and answer session with dinner at 6 p.m. on December 17th at the Holiday Inn Express in North Sioux City. On that Friday night, Cropley, Thompson Williams, Tillo, and Tomsha will all be home for a meet and greet with a social gathering. Parents are required to come if their kids do come. Oberle and Briarcliff University baseball coach Corby McLaughlin will MC the event. There will be a question and answers session, and there will be an online forum where players and fans can submit questions ahead of time. Then on Saturday, those four players will give lessons to kids based on their interests. The younger players will be rotated around while the high school players will be grouped. For example, high school kids who want to learn about pitching will be grouped with Tillo. Oberle said the cost for the two-hour session and the meet and greet is $120, and there will be a Black Friday sale on USA's website. Then in January, Tomsha will be back with Tyler Smarslock, who is the infield coach for the Saints and works with the Twins. Smarslock will fly up during the weekend of January 22nd for a camp for infielders only. The big picture I want to show to the Siouxland is we want to keep bringing in these high-level trainers, Oberle said. We want to be the place for sports to train. We just had South Dakota softball last weekend here. We just want people to come train and be holistic to what they're able to do. And this brings us to the end of reading the Sioux City Journal for today, Thursday, November 18th, 2021. If you have any questions or comments for Iris, please call 1-877-404-4747. Thank you for listening to the Sioux City Journal.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. At high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. Chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now, researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.